Chapter 12. The following Thursday, Colin woke up to the sounds of Rooster mixing with Hassan's prayers. Colin rolled out of bed, pulled on a t-shirt, peed, and then entered Hassan's room through the bathroom. Hassan was back in bed, his eyes closed.
Is there a way you could pray less loudly? I mean, shouldn't God be able to hear you even if you whisper? He asked.
I'm calling in sick, Hassan said without opening his eyes. I think I have a sinus infection, and also I need a day off. Jesus, this working business is all right, but I need to sit in my boxes and watch Judge Judy. Do you realize I haven't seen Judge Judy in, like, 12 days? Imagine if you were separated from the love of your life for 12 days. With his lips pursed, Colin stared at Hassan silently. Hassan blinked, opened his eyes.
Oh, right. Sorry.
You can't call in sick. Your boss works here, in the house. She'll know you're not sick. She spends Thursdays at the factory, dumbass. You need to pay better attention. It's the perfect day to call in sick. I just need to charge the emotional batteries.
You've been charging the batteries all year. You haven't done anything in 12 months.
Hassan smirked.
Don't you have to go to work or something?
At least call your mum and tell her to send a deposit to Loyola. The deposit deadline's in 4 weeks. I looked online for you. Hassan didn't open his eyes.
I'm trying to think of a word. God. It's right on the tip of my tongue. Duh. Do. Dee.
All right. Dingleberries, motherfucker. Dingleberries. When Colin got downstairs, he saw that Hollis was already up already. Or maybe she'd just stayed up all night. And dressed in a pink pantsuit.
Beautiful day in the country, she said. High's only 83 today. But Lord, I sure am glad Thursday only comes around once a week.
Where Colin sat down beside her on the dining room table, he asked,
What do you do on Thursdays?
Oh, I just like to go into the factory and check on things in the morning. And then around noon, I drive to Memphis and visit our warehouse.
Why is the warehouse in Memphis instead of Gutshot? Asked Colin.
Lord, you ask a lot of questions, Hollis answered.
So listen, you'll have interviewed most everyone who works at the factory now, so I'm going to start sending you out to other folks in Gutshot, factory retirees and that kind of thing. I still just need you to ask the 4 questions, but you might want to stay a bit longer, just to look polite and all.
Colin nodded. After a bit of silence, he said,
Hassan's sick. He's a sinus infection.
Poor thing.
Okay, you'll go out with Lindsay. It's a bit of a drive today. You're going to see the Oldsters.
The Oldsters?
That's what Lindsay calls them. The folks that live at the nursing home in Bradford. A lot of them live off pensions from Gutshot Textiles.
Lindsay used to visit these folks all the time before she started, Hollis sighed. Dating that...
Hollis sighed again. Boy.
Hollis craned her neck and shouted down the hall. Lindsay, get your lazy ass out of bed. Even though the sound of Hollis's thick voice had to carry down the hallway and through 2 closed doors to reach Lindsay, Lindsay shouted back moments later,
Put a quarter in the goddamn square jar, Hollis. I'm about to take a shower.
Hollis got up, put a quarter in the square jar on the mantel and walked back to Colin, mussed his chew fro and said, Listen, I'll be late. Long drive back from Memphis. I'll have my cell on. You'll be safe. By the time... Lindsay got downstairs, wearing khaki shorts and a tight-fitting black Gutshot t-shirt. Hassan was on the couch, watching reruns of Saturday Night Live.
Who are our victims today? Asked Lindsay.
The Oldsters.
That's cool, actually. I'm a veteran off that joint.
Okay, off the couch, Hass.
Sorry, Linz. I called in sick, he said.
I've never called her Linz, Colin thought. Hassan laughed at some joke on the TV. Lindsay blew hair out of her face, and then she grabbed Colin by his upper arm and led him out to the hearse.
I can't believe he's calling in sick, said Colin, but he started the car.
I'm fucking exhausted from staying up half the night reading a fucking book about the invention of television, and he gets to fucking call in sick.
Hey, why the fuck do you and Hassan say fuck all the time?
Colin exhaled slowly, his cheeks puffing out.
Have you ever read The Naked and the Dead by Norman Mailer?
I don't even know who that is.
American novelist, born in 1923. I was reading it when I first met Hassan. And then later, Hassan ended up reading it, because it's all about war, and Hassan likes action-y books. Anyway, it's 872 pages, and it uses the word fug, or fugging, or fugger, or whatever, about 37,000 times. Every other word is a fug, pretty much. So anyway, after I read a novel, I like to read some literary criticism of it. "Colour me surprised," she said. Right. Well, when Mailer wrote the book, he didn't use fug. But then he sent it to a publisher, and they were like, "This is a really excellent book you've written, Mr. Mailer. But no one here in 1948 is going to buy it, because it contains even more F-bombs than it does regular bombs." So Norman Mailer, as a kind of fug you to the publisher, went through his 872-page book and changed every last F-word to fug. So I told Hassan the story while he was reading the book, and he decided to start saying fug as a homage to Mr. Mailer, and because you can say it in class without getting in trouble. It's a good story. See? You can tell a story. She said, her smile like bright white firecrackers in a starless sky. It doesn't have a moral, and it doesn't contain any romance or adventure, but it's a story at least. And you didn't share any meditations on hydration. In his peripheral vision, Colin could see her smiling at him. "Turn left. We go down this fugging road forever, and then... Oh, wait, slow down, that's Chase's car." A two-toned Chevy Bronco appeared from the other direction. Reluctantly, Colin brought the hearse to a stop. T.O.C. was behind the wheel. Colin rolled down the window as T.O.C. rolled down his. Lindsay leaned across and across Colin to look up at her boyfriend. "Hey, lass," T.O.C. said. "Not funny," Lindsay said emphatically, as Chase, riding shotgun, howled with laughter. "Listen, Chase and me are going to meet Fulton tonight at the camp. See you there?" "I think I'm going to stay home tonight," she said, and then turned her head to Colin and said, "Go." "Oh, Linz, I was just screwing with you." "Go," she said again. Colin hit the gas and shut off. Colin was about to ask for an explanation of the scene when Lindsay turned to him and said very calmly, "It's nothing. Just an inside joke. So anyway, I read your notebook, but I don't really understand it all. But at least I looked at everything." Colin quickly forgot about the weirdness with TOC and asked, "What do you think?" "Well, first, it kept making me think that what we talked about when you first got here, when I told you I thought it was a bad idea to matter. I think I've got to take that back, because looking at your notes, I keep wanting to find a way to improve on your theorem. I had this total hard-on for fixing it and proving to you that relationships could be seen as a pattern. I mean, it ought to work. People are so damn predictable. And then the theorem wouldn't be yours, it would be ours, and I could... Okay, this sounds retarded. But anyway, I guess I do want to matter a little, or to be known outside Gutshot, or I wouldn't have thought so much about it. Maybe I just wanted to be big time without leaving here." Colin slowed as he approached a stop sign and then looked at her. "Sorry," he said. "Why sorry?" "Because you couldn't fix it." "Oh, but I did," she said. Colin brought the car to a full stop 20 feet in front of the stop sign and said, "Are you sure?" And she just kept smiling. "Well, tell me," he pleaded. "Okay. Well, I didn't fix it, but I have an idea. I suck at math, like really, really suck. So tell me if I have this wrong. But it seems like the only factor that goes into the formula is where each person fits on the dumper-dumpy scale, right?" "Right, that's what the formula's about. It's about getting dumped." "Yeah, but that's not the only factor in a relationship. There's, like, age. When you're 9, your relationships tend to be shorter and less serious and more random than when you're 41 and desperate to get married before your flow of eggs dries up, right?" Colin turned away from Lindsay and looked at the intersecting roads before him, both utterly abandoned. He thought it through for a while. "It seems so obvious now. Many discoveries do." "More variables," he announced enthusiastically. "Right. Like I said, age, for starters. But a lot of things go into it. I'm sorry, but attractiveness matters. There's this guy who just joined the Marines, but last year he was a senior. He was like 210 pounds of chiselled muscle. And I love Colin and everything, but this guy was dead sexy. And also really sweet and nice, and he drove a tricked out Montero. I hate that guy, Colin said. Lindsay laughed. Right, you totally would. But anyway, total dumper. Self-professed proponent of the four Fs. Find 'em, feel 'em, fug 'em, and forget 'em. Only he made the mistake of dating the only person hotter than him in Middle Tennessee, Katrina. And he became the clingiest, neediest, whimperingest little puppy dog. And finally, Katrina had to ditch him. But it's not just physical attraction, Colin said, reaching into his pocket for a pencil and notepad. It's how attractive you find the person, and how attractive they find you. Like, say there's this girl who's really pretty, but as it happens, I have a weird fetish and only like girls with 13 toes. Well, I might be the dumper if she happens to be 10-toed and only gets turned on by skinny guys with glasses and jufros. And really green eyes, Lindsay added nonchalantly. What? I was complimenting you, she said. Oh, mine. Green. Right. Smooth, Singleton. Smooth. Anyway, I think it needs to be way more complicated. So, needs to be so complicated that a math-tard won't understand it in the least. A car pulled up behind them and honked. So Colin returned to driving, and by the time they were in the cavernous parking lot of the nursing home, they'd settled on 5 variables. Age, popularity differential, attractiveness differential, dumper-dumpee differential, introvert-extrovert differential. They sat in the car together with the windows down, the air warm and sticky but not stifling. Colin sketched a possible new concept and explained the math to Lindsay, who made suggestions and watched his sketching. Within 30 minutes he was cranking out the basic she broke up with him frowny face graph for several Catherines, but he couldn't get the timing right. Catherine 18, who cost him months of his life, didn't look like she lasted any longer or mattered any more than the 3.5 days he spent in the arms of Catherine 5. He was creating too simple a formula, and he was still trying to do it completely randomly. What if I square the attractiveness variable? What if I put a sine wave here or a fraction there? He needed to see the formula not as math, which he hated, but as language, which he loved. So he started thinking of the formula as an attempt to communicate something. He started creating fractions within the graphs so they'd be easier to work within a graph. He began to see, before even inputting the variables, how different formulas would render the Catherines. And as he did so, the formula grew increasingly complicated, until it became to seem almost, how to put this not so dorkily, well, beautiful. After an hour parked in the car, the formula looked a little something like this. D to the power 7 times x to the power 8 plus d squared x cubed minus x to the power 4 over a to the power 5 minus cx to the power 2 minus px plus 1 over a plus 13p plus sine 2x over 2 times 1 plus negative 1 to the power h plus 1 times x plus 11 pi over 2 to the power h over x plus 11 pi over 2 to the power h to the power 65. That doesn't count as math, because one does not have to understand how it works or what it means in order to think it looks sort of beautiful. I think that's close, he said finally. And I sure as shit don't understand it at all. So you've succeeded in my eyes, she laughed. Okay, let's go hang out with the oldsters. Colin had only been in a nursing home once. He and his dad drove through Illinois one weekend when Colin was 11 to visit Colin's great-great-aunt Esther, who was in a coma at the time and therefore not very good company. So he was pleasantly stunned by Sunset Acres. A picnic table on the lawn outside. 4 old women, all wearing broad straw hats, were playing a card game. "Is that Lindsay Lee Wells?" one of the women asked. And then Lindsay brightened and hastened over to the table. The woman laid down their cards to hug Lindsay and pat her puffy cheeks. Lindsay knew them all by name, Jolene, Gladys, Karen, and Mona, and introduced Colin to them, whereupon Jolene took off her hat, fanned her face, and said, "My, Lindsay, you do have a nice-looking boyfriend, don't you? No wonder you don't come round to visit us no more." "Oh, Jolene, he ain't my boyfriend. I'm sorry I haven't been around as much. I've been so busy with school, and Hollis works me like a dog down at the store." And then they took to discussing Hollis. It took 15 minutes before Colin could even get his tape recorder started to ask the 4 questions they'd come there to ask, but he didn't mind. First, because Jolene thought he was nice-looking, and second, because they were such a relaxed bunch of old people. For example, Mona, a woman with liver spots and a gauze patch over her left eye, answered the question, "What's special about Gutshot?" by saying, "Well, for starters, that mill has got a right good pension plan. I've been retired for 30 years, and Hollis Wells still buys my diapers. That's right, I use them. I pee myself when I laugh," she said gleefully, and then laughed disturbingly hard. And Lindsay, it seemed to Colin, was some kind of rock star amongst the elders. As word filtered through the building that she'd arrived, more and more of them made their way to the picnic tables outside and hovered around Lindsay. Colin went from person to person, recording their answers to the questions. Eventually he just sat down and let Lindsay through with people his way. His favourite interview was with a man named Roy Walker. "Well, I can't imagine," Roy said, "why on earth anyone would want to hear from me, but I'm happy to chat." Roy was starting to tell Colin about his former job as a night shift plant manager of the Gutshot Textiles, but then he stopped suddenly and said, "Look how they're all loving on little Lindsay. We all raised that girl up. I used to see her once a week or more. We knew her when she was a baby, and we knew her when you couldn't tell her from a boy, and we knew her when she had blue hair. She used to sneak me in 1 Budweiser beer every Saturday, bless her heart. Son, if there's one thing I know," and Colin thought about how old people like to tell you the one thing they know, "it's that there's some people in this world who you can just love and love and love, no matter what." Colin followed Roy over to Lindsay then. Lindsay was twisting a lock of her hair casually, but staring intently at Jolene. "Jolene, what do you just say? I was telling Helen that your mamma is selling 200 acres of land up Bishop's Hill to my boy Marcus." "Hollis is selling land on Bishop's Hill?" "That's right, to Marcus. I think Marcus wants to build himself some houses up there, build a little, I don't remember what he calls it." Lindsay half closed her eyes and sighed. "A subdivision?" she asked. "That's right, subdivision. Up there on the hill, I guess. Nice views, anyway." Lindsay became quiet after that, her big eyes staring off into the distance at fields behind the nursing home. Colin sat there and listened to the old folks talking, and then finally Lindsay grabbed his arm just above the elbow and said, "We should get going." As soon as the hearse's doors were shut, Lindsay mumbled to herself, "Mum would never sell land. Never. Why is she doing that?" It occurred to Colin that he'd never heard Lindsay refer to Hollis as Mum. Why would she sell land to that guy? "Maybe she needs money," Colin offered. "She needs money like I need a goddamn hole in my head. My great-grandfather built that factory. Dr. Fred ends at Dinsenfar. We aren't hurting for money, I promise you." "Was he Arab?" "What?" "Dinsenfar." "No, he wasn't Arab. He was from Germany or something. Anyway, he spoke German. So does Hollis, that's how I know it. Why do you always ask such ridiculous questions?" "Jeez, sorry." "Oh, whatever. I'm just confused." "Who cares? On to other things. It's fun hanging out with the oldsters, isn't it? You wouldn't think it, but they're cool as hell. I used to visit those people at their houses. Most of them weren't even in their home then. Almost every day. I'd just go from house to house, getting fed and getting hugged on. Those were the pre-friend days." "They certainly seemed to adore you," Colin said. "Me? The ladies couldn't talk about anything but how hot you were. You're missing a whole demographic of Catherine's by not chasing the over 80 market." "It's funny how they thought we were dating," Colin said, glancing over at her. "How's that funny?" she asked, holding his gaze. He said. Distracted from the road, Colin watched as she gave him the slightest version of her inimitable smile.